Avi Adoni Dodi. We enter into this study to draw close to you for the sake of holy service and the fulfillment of your will for us and for all of Israel and for this entire planet. Please assist our efforts and guide our understandings. Let us internalize your Torah to the depths of our being so that we become transformed by your will and its truths. Let neither ourselves nor anyone else come into stumbling as a result of this study. Ga'enai va'abita nifla'ot me'toratecha. Okay, so we are in the chapter of Dan L'chav Zchut, of judging people to the side of merit. And he was talking about how actually not everyone is necessarily judged by the same standard, that there are people who have demonstrated a commitment to integrity and to like living a God-centered virtuous life or whatever. And so, and assuming that that is sincere, like they're not a hypocrite or whatever. So then for such a person, we really are the full measure of obligation to judge to the side of merit applies. And even if we observe them doing something that seems clearly not all right, we should, at least the first time we observe that, we should assume that there is some legitimate explanation for that, and to kind of judge favorably, even though it's kind of a stretch, that explanation. But nevertheless, they, because of the kind of righteousness of their life, so it is fitting to give them that extend that kind of slack to such a person. Then the next category of person is a Beinoni, and which is a person who is basically, you know, a good serving, God-centered person, but is a little bit but not 100%. And so, meaning that they give themselves slack in various areas. And so for that person, also, we should really judge the side of merit. And even if it seems a little bit far-fetched to kind of extend that a favorable explanation for what we observed. But if it really is like, you know, like the explanation that would be required to justify their behavior is so unlikely, so then we are also allowed to kind of have it like suspend belief, meaning that we assume there's probably some kind of explanation, but we're not completely sure. And so we'll keep an eye out and an ear out for this person to see if any other supportive evidence appears that seems to suggest that they're not completely straight or consistent or like living with full integrity to the values that they pretend to uphold. So and so that's the tzaddik and the beinoni. And then there was the person who really is not at all, doesn't pretend to live a good, a wholesome life. And so for that person, we can judge the appearances as we see them. And if it's possible within the realm of reasonability to assume something favorable, so we should do that. But it's also reasonable to also assume that the behavior that they've displayed is not up to standards, so to speak.
Sorry, Dee, can you remind me what's the problem with judging someone like just sort of like, I would say fairly, but someone not to the side of favor?
Right. So it's like the Tselem Elohim, like each person has a Tselem Elohim, like is created in the image of God. And so there is like part of just the kindness of heart, the value of kindness of heart, and the kind of community bonding, there is facilitated by judging people to the side of merit. And also, once you judge them critically, you end up like that's often the first step in a hit dardarut of some kind of conflict or some kind of lashon hara, you know, of talking about them. And it creates like the cohesiveness of community also disintegrates or can disintegrate through critical judgment. And also it's just kind of a training of well, the first explanation that I gave of just a cultivating a kindness of heart to judge people positively rather than critically where possible.
So
yeah.
What does Bain mean?
Like an intermediate.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
And can you screen share the text?
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to do that. Yes.
Thanks.
But Zalikov Schud is not a whole, it's not like Doraita. Like it's not.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mitzvah ase min ha-Torah ledon et ha-chaveiro lechav schud. Shene'amar, v'tzedek tishpot amitecha. Vayikra 19:15. Okay, and so, and also like kind of what does it mean to judge a person to the side of merit? So there was the like one way to do that is to, you know, kind of create a story for what you saw that, that in that story, that person's behavior actually was appropriate under those circumstances, and the person did good rather than bad. So that's one way of judging to the side of merit. But another way that he has shared with us is more that, okay, the person did do what they what you saw them do, but you just kind of make an excuse in your head for them that they really that they were raised in a family that was where the father was an alcoholic and the mother was a blah, 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 blah. And so he, the person didn't get the proper chinuch or, you know, kind of moral guidance or whatever to be able to do any better than that. And so what can you expect of them? Or that maybe there's some kind of extenuating circumstances that we don't know about that kind of underlie that brought them to a point where they, you know, kind of lost their temper in a very ugly way or something like that. Then we only saw the end of the story and we didn't see the context that it all happened in. So those are ways of fulfilling the mitzvah. And the last thing that we read last week was kind of in the bottom line, because it's not so simple, we don't live in a world like in a shtetl where we really have known people from cradle to grave and we know their behaviors and their personality, idiosyncrasies and all that, and we know what their family life and chinuch was like. We don't know any of that really for most of the people around us. And so he So to be able to categorize, and you know, to be able to categorize someone as in the tzaddik category or the beinoni category or the regular category. And so he suggests that basically, like, a person is, and also we just grow unevenly. Like, there are aspects of our lives that we bring, you know, consciousness and integrity and care and precision to, in terms of like trying to be righteous in such areas. And then there are places that are just that we haven't really brought up to speed in terms of our character traits. And so he says in the last paragraph that we read last week that, so each person, if you know that they say, for example, that this person is careful, very, very careful around, say, matters of Shabbat, and they are, and you see them doing something that seems to be contrary to that, and everyone would know better than that, then because they have, because they are careful, and that's an area of specialty, so to speak, in their life, of special commitment. So then it's then they are a kind of have the status of tzaddik in that area, and it's appropriate to judge them, find a way to judge them to the side of merit, to explain what you observe that seemed to be problematical, to find a way to explain it that is like a good excuse, a legitimate excuse for it. And it, whereas if that person is very careful on Shabbat, but you don't know anything about how careful they are in, say, mitzvot bein anam lechavero, in their way they treat their fellow human beings. And so you see them doing something that seems like grossly inconsiderate. So because they don't have any they haven't generated any currency, so to speak, of virtue in that area, so you are able to, if you see something problematical there, you are able to, you're not violating this mitzvah by judging them critically based on what you have seen in an area where they have not demonstrated any special commit, like a tzaddik level of commitment to those requirements or standards. So that's where we left off. Does anybody have, and we also did talk about how there is a certain conflict. Whenever we read things like this, so we're sitting in one chair and we're just kind of viewing things from these, from this value of dan l'chav zchut, of judging to the side of merit. But we have talked about, and it's going to come up a little bit today as well, that there is a counter value that is clashes, and that in real life there's always the need to sort it out, which is the value of toelet, which is that sometimes the what is observed, the problems that are observed, are problems that are likely to affect other people in the community if they don't realize, if they're not alerted to the fact that this person, you know, like he's a serial, like, business partner. He goes into partnerships and then he backs out, or, you know, like things like that, that, that if you just judge to the side of merit, if that was the only value here, then you make other people in the community vulnerable to being ripped off by him or her, or also in terms of sexual matters, that's, there's kind of whispers that something that boundaries are being crossed by this person. And so on one hand, there's the value of judging to the side of merit. And on the other hand, there is the value of a danger to the community that needs to be checked. And so always there is a, you know, kind of a delicate matter of having to sort those kinds of things out. And it's been a problem, you know, it's like kind of trying to find the balance, because if someone looks the part of an ultra orthodox religious person, and there's like some girls that are like whispering that they've been, you know, that somehow their physical boundaries have been breached by this person, it has been that the rabbis listen to the rabbi and more than they listen to the girls, say, who are bringing a complaint. So that's slowly beginning to change, but that has been a bit of a problem historically in this world. Anybody have anything they want to say before I go into the text now?
Sari Hadid.
Yes.
Well, I have a different kind of example. I'm going through a medication change right now, which affects my memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I was leading a group meeting yesterday, and afterwards, one of the members of the group got it on Zoom. And afterwards, one of the members of the group got in touch with me and said, you know, you're really not following the unwritten rules of leading the group. You know, you shouldn't have, you should have done that, whatever. And I didn't want to. And I even had mentioned during the meeting that I was having memory problems, but I didn't explain why, and I didn't want to get into it with her because I didn't want to, you know, sound like I was rationalizing it. But I mean, that's a whole nother area where I feel like it's something, you know, relatively beyond my control, and it's, you know, I'm talking to my doctor about it, and it'll get ironed out soon. But it just, I don't know. I almost said at the beginning of the meeting, can someone else do this? Because I might not be able to do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, very well, but I didn't. So
I mean, it sounds like you should judge yourself to the side of merit, really. I mean, like, you know, you should cut yourself some slack, and you know, it takes time to adjust to new, you know, medical regimens or whatever. And so,
yeah,
it's
well, and I just sent her a very brief message back saying, thanks, I'll try to be more mindful about it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's nice.
You know, seemed to satisfy her. She sent back a message saying thank you, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I'm still, you know, replaying it in my mind, of course.
Right. But in the long
is there a part of this body of work that discusses self-judgment?
Not in this chapter. I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah. And I think that we should apply it to self-judge. I think it applies equally to self and other. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe almost more importantly, so.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Good question, Sean.
Yeah.
Well, you inspired it.
Yeah, so when we have the section to talk about things, we should talk about that, I think. Okay, so we're on hay here, which is in the kind of top middle of the page over here. V'yesh klal gadol b'inyanim elu. So, and also this does get into what it gets into. So there is an important principle that emerges from this discussion. Delifamim ha'adam ro'eh eze ma'aseh shenir'eh la'avla gedola ve'eino ro'eh ba'tzad zchut l'chavero klal. So sometimes it happens that a person sees someone behaving in a certain way that appears to them like a real corruption, like something, like a serious flawed behavior, big time, gedola. And the person is not able, can't see, like at first glance, is not able to see any tzad zchut, any way, any reasonable way to judge that deed meritoriously, to find some kind of explanation that makes it okay or to ameliorate the seriousness of it, the seriousness of the badness of it. V'ze ba lo mitoch choser hitbonanut. So he says that basically is just laziness. That's what he's saying, that a person has not invested enough hitbonanut, enough like kind of commitment and reflection. Hitbonanut is meditation, really, like meditative reflection on the situation. She'ilo yichshov odot chavero yimsa lifamim she'ulai haya shogeg b'zeh. O ulai eno yodea chomer ha'isor. Because that if a person would give it more thought and really sit with the problem, they would probably find that perhaps the person was shogeg b'zeh, did it accidentally, or like didn't realize that what they were doing was kind of having the impact that it had, or would have the impact that it had, or perhaps eno yodea chomer ha'isor, or didn't really appreciate how serious the matter was, and what a breach it really was. Ve'ulai lefi achinuch shekabel hayachoshev davar ze ledavar tov, and perhaps even that given their background and their family life and all that, that maybe they even were under the delusion that it actually was a good thing and not a bad thing. Oh, ulai haita hamitziut ktsat acheret mima shekara biiton o shama me acherim. Or perhaps the way that you know that this person did such a shameful act was because you read about it in the paper. And everyone knows that the paper is not really reliable about these kinds of things and the subtleties of them. And so maybe there was some kind of context that the paper didn't mention, ktsat acher, and or they told the story in a way that wasn't exactly accurate. Or even the newspaper, or maybe you heard it secondhand or whatever. And so same thing there. Va'od yesh lo lichshov shaharbe pa'amim ro'eh midat ra'ah be'eze adam. And furthermore, it's possible to think that, let's see, wait a minute. V'od yesh lachshov shaharbe pa'amim ro'eh mida ra'ah be'ezeh adam. And also, you know, it might be like a featured in the newspaper, but when you think about it, really, the underlying mida there is something that isn't so rare, that actually everyone does that in one way or another, maybe not to the extremest degree, but to some degree. Ve'im haita otaha mida be'achav, V'kol shaken ba'atzmo v'day haya ma'alin ayin mizeh. And if the reality is that if it was your beloved brother or spouse or even yourself who was doing that thing that you, that behavior that's being judged, you would basically just turn a blind eye to it. You would just turn your attention away and not get involved. Varak mipne shehu etzel adam acher masito hayetzer hara shelo laha'alim ayin. And it's only because it is this stranger that is a convenient kind of scapegoat that you are now justified to unload all your judgments upon, that your kind of yetzer hara, your evil inclination, you know, takes advantage of that opportunity and really projects all kinds of gunk on that person, and doesn't allow you to turn a blind lahalim ayin means like turn a blind eye to divert your attention from it. Omnam hakatuv omer, but the Torah commands us, omer v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, you should love your neighbor as yourself, which means the same excuses that you extend to yourself, you should extend to this stranger as well. Explanations and rationalizations that you would apply to yourself, you apply to this person. Sof davar, ein sof lehit natslut sheyachol ha'adam letet ba'ad chavero. And kind of at the end of the day, there's no end to the excuses that a person is able to come up with to explain away these kinds of bad behaviors from when that person who's doing them is someone that you love, and especially if that someone is yourself. Va'al yadam mamish yahafchu hadavarim min hakatse el katse, and you can, through your rationalizations and extenuating circumstances and all that, you can turn a situation from one degree to another, from totally bad to totally acceptable. Ve'im nitatzel b'zeh v'dan oto l'chav chov, hare avar al mitzvat aseh. And if what I'm saying is true, that it is a situation where you would and have and could find all kinds of justifications for yourself or someone that you're close to, and you don't do it for this person as well, then you are guilty of violating a positive commandment of the Torah, the commandment to judge your neighbor to the side of merit. V'lo od elishahu hagorim hagadol la'avor al lashon hara v'rechilut v'sha'ar lavim v'asin asin labein adam lechaveru. And so there is, like we were saying earlier, that there is the command, the mitzvah itself, that is a mitzvah from the Torah to judge everyone to the side of merit. But it's also like if you judge to the side of guilt, then that is very likely to lead to gossip and hurtful speech and other prohibitions that go beyond, that kind of snowball from the the neglecting the commandment of judging to the side of merit. Anybody have anything to say before I go on? Vamaya sehadam imra'a adam ose davar avla vidarash v'chaker but kol kochotav l'chapes alav schut v'lo alav biyado. And what about a situation where a person sees another person, person A sees person B doing something that is seriously not okay, like say stealing, shoplifting or something like that. V'darash v'chaker, and the person investigates and meditates, like it said in the paragraph before, and to the best of their ability, tries to find some way to justify and to explain in a meritorious way what happened there. V'lo ala biyado, and the person cannot. Then yitbonen b'masha amru chazal. Then the person should kind of meditate on the advice that is given in Pirkei Avot, which is al tadin et chavercha ad shetagia limkomo, that you should not judge a person unless you have stood in their shoes or stood in their place. It's just interesting that this is coming up here, because I just received, I think I mentioned some weeks back, that there was this huge scandal that has been rocking the religious world, which is this writer of children's books who was accused of, by quite a number of people, accused of sexual abuse. And because he was so beloved in the community, it's very difficult for people to let go of their image of him and to accept the testimony of the young girls. And so she wrote a very, very heartbreaking letter. It was very long, but kind of explaining, you know, how it, like, because people would ask her, well, why didn't you just stop? Or why didn't you just say no? And so she was explaining how you get kind of under the spell. Like, it was very interesting. But she also was very, very angry with a Rebbetzin who is quite well known, and who used this, like, you can't judge a person unless you've stood in their place or in their shoes, to kind of suspend judgment of this person, as if to say, we don't know, we can't really determine what happened, because, you know, we can't judge until we've stood in their shoes. And this girl who kind of was writing the letter was so deeply offended by that, because she felt like it kind of was dismissing her report and making light of her experience. And so it's an example of kind of the two truths that need to be balanced in this mitzvah of judging to the side of merit, of really being able to also point the finger of guilt when it's appropriate to do so.
What's the principle called to know how, like, to stand in someone's shoes? Is it a principle, or is it just a technique?
I think it's just a technique, but yeah. But then there is that principle that we talked about of Tohelet, which is that if when you're dealing with a situation, a sin or an accusation that has this kind of implication on community, then it holds weight as a principle that counterbalances the judge to the side of merit. What was I going to say? Mm-hmm.
Right. It seems that the whoever this Rebbetzin was misunderstood what it is to stand in someone's shoes. Because then, if she stood in the victim's shoes, she would be able to say nothing.
Uh huh. Interesting. Yeah. Right. In other words, she stood in one set of shoes, but not in another.
Exactly. I mean, like it's an absurd thing to say when it's a two-sided
mm-hmm.
situation. Like that's the example where you could say nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well,
logic.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Also stands to reason that since she was married to this guy, that she likely was under his spell. I mean, she had to come up. She had to know what was going on at some level.
Wait, say it, no, it was not some, was married. Wait, what happened? The woman who wrote the letter is a girl who was abused by the author.
By the writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. She wasn't married to him.
Oh, no, I know that. But the Rebbetzin was married to him now.
No. She was just a Rebbetzin in the community that has a
really
high standing.
Okay.
Like she's very much like her word makes a difference. And for her to kind of choose that way of response was kind of strange.
Oh, yeah, that is.
Yeah.
That's bad.
I mean, it's, yeah. Like
that's dark. Yeah.
It seemed like it's in some ways was taking the material that we're reading and not understanding it as kind of one principle that needs to be integrated into a larger picture with other principles that are equally relevant and how to, you know, kind of then chart a path through them both. Seems like the Rebbetzin just took this and you know, stated and kind of relied upon that alone and not on really the complexity of it in terms of, as Alana's saying, the two sides of the matter.
I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And so, but I mean, on some hand, there is the idea of, you know, like we say, of judging the person and judging the behavior. And so there is like this idea of standing in someone's shoes is really kind of making space to acknowledge that you don't know what this person who committed this completely unacceptable act, or many of them, what was happening in, you know, what kind of addictions he was struggling with. And, you know, it's not an excuse for the behavior, but there is a certain compassionate acknowledgement that you know, people, they're sex addicts and they, you know, they need to get a handle on it, but it is something that most of us, thank God, don't know what that level of drive or addiction is in the psyche. So in that sense, there is still space for Al tadin et chavercha ad shetagiyo lemakomo. You should not judge a person unless you stand in your shoes, meaning you can judge their behavior, but it gives a little bit of space of compassion for the personhood and the challenge, which is V'ilu ata haita bimkomo, and if you were in their place, if you came through and had the same intrapsychic anatomy, so to speak, that person has, ashir, wealthy kamohu kamoto, o ani kamoto, rich like them or poor like them, im chinuch kamoto shehu kabel, or with the chinuch that they received, hayadiat b'midotecha shelo haita ose kamot shehu ose. And you're, basically had the personality structure of them, that there's no guarantee that you wouldn't have crossed the same boundaries that person crossed, given the drives, having similar drives. Ubeze yistamu piot shel eze anashim kishayot sot shmuot avla al eze mosad hatorah chas v'shalom. And this is also, he's going to apply it to situations, unfortunately, that are not rare, where the people, like often administrations or rabbis, that there are certain rumors of corruption, usually in terms of finances, that are happening in various Torah institutions. Al eze mosad Torah chas v'shalom shechutz mimasha b'derek klal hashmu oten sheker be'ikaran. We're not talking about, he says, situations where there are just lies. People make up lies that have no basis in truth. He says, we're not talking about that. Ve'im lo be'ikaran l'kol ha'pachot mechalkan. But in situations where there is some real truth to these accusations and investigations, the kasha came al yirei shemayim nitchayavnu ladon lechaf zchut gam ki karov hadavar lantot lechaf chov. And in such situations, the obligation to judge meritoriously applies, and it applies even when it's kind of far-fetched to judge meritoriously, because they have this protective shield, so to speak, of being a Torah institution. So there is, so he's saying that there is a certain obligation to not jump to judgment and accusation. Like, one of the things that happens is, there's all kinds of little ways that people figure out how to, like, give, like, a person gives a donation and it's like, seems to be this amount, and then they give, and the person gets this amount of tax credit for it, and then they give the donation back to the person and split the tax credit, or I don't know. And it's a way of, there's just all these sneaky ways to try to get money out of the government. And so that, unfortunately, many of the religious institutions have kind of figured out. And so these kinds of things come up not infrequently. And so he's saying that, we are obligated to kind of stretch and judge to the side of merit in these matters. O chi'im yitbonein harbe yimsa kama v'kama itmalot, that and to kind of give it the meditation and the thought to identify extenuating circumstances and various justifications that soften the judgment. Kagon sha'ulai ta'u oto kuduma, like that's they were tricked somehow or whatever. Va'asur laha'amin lishmu'ot o la'itonot Hamachishim ze v'omrim sha'asu b'mezid. And for sure, like at the very least, to not trust the reports and the newspapers that accuse them of doing this in a wanton way, b'mezid, like v'chutz mize naniach shechalila asu eze avla chas v'shalom l'tzarech mosad Torah, tzarech ha'adam l'ta'er la'atzmo eich margish adam sha'ol taksit mosad Torah al shikmo. And that to appreciate that these yeshivas are running on a shoestring budget, and the amount of stress upon the person who's the fundraiser, who's holding the yoke of responsibility for subsidizing the learning that's happening in this Mossad Torah, in this Torah Institute, is just beyond imagination. The weight of the burden of responsibility that that person is taking on their shoulders. V'sheyom yom alav la'asof nidavot me'anashim shechayim chay deshen ve'eno muchanim limsor marbit honam la'amlei Torah. And day after day, they are trying to gather funds from people that live a luxurious life and are not willing to dedicate some reasonable portion of their income to support Torah learning. Vayikshov ilu hayahu bimkomo, and to realize and to think, say to yourself that if I was in this person's place, ha'im hu haya yoter tov mimenu o garua mimenu, would I behave better than him or worse than him? Vayikshov shagam minahel hamosad hazeh lo hayat sarich lezeh, and that the person whose job it is to the minahel, who's trying to like keep ends meeting, is mosad hazeh hu hayat sarich, like does he need this? Does he need this? He could just leave the institution altogether and just live a respectable life as a balabayit, you know, just a homeowner or whatever, get a regular job and not have to take on the stress of trying to keep the institute afloat. Zeliyot Balhabayat Mechubad.
Can I interrupt for one second? I think your camera got knocked out of place, at least from my view. There we go.
I can't see it, so I can't tell what's in.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, let's see. Balabai v'hu faresh mehevle olam hazeh. Uma im mitoch hadchak. And so, can you really judge that this person, in the midst of mitoch hadchak, this kind of pressure cooker of being a fundraiser for one of the billions of Torah institutions, millions of them, asa shigi'a va'avla, that the person made a wrong move. He did something that was just not so wise and really was not completely straight. Ha'im nigra ercho legamre al yedei zeh, and can you say, does his value or integrity, is it like go down from like down to zero because of that one bad move? V'kashe yikshov makshavot kagon elu Vadai Yit Boshesh Me Atzmo. And when a person thinks thoughts such as these, for sure, Yitboshesh, like when you kind of go through this excuse process that he's kind of presented, then a person will feel ashamed of themselves for judging that person so harshly, and not having more empathy for what drove them to make such a bad move. Not that the move wasn't bad, but there's a whole context to it. Yiboshesh metzo v'yadasha kol ma shebnei adam mit lotzitzim mimenu ein ze ela ga'ava v'leitzanut. This is what we're going to be talking about in the next chapter, which is scorn, using scornful words. And so he's noting that this kind of scapegoat syndrome, that when someone falls, everyone projects their scorn onto that person. Like there is some kind of psychic relief that happens that is out of control with the internet and stuff, but it's a phenomenon that way preceded that. But so that's what he's saying, and that it's becomes a situation of va'adarabo yimaharu la'azro, and instead of scorning that person, and like kind of there's a certain psychic relief that comes from that, va'adarabo, on the contrary, yimaharu la'azor, you should kind of move to help them. V'kayamim b'ze mitzvat ase doche achicha mecha, and you should kind of fulfill the mitzvah of helping your neighbor. There's another mitzvah of helping your neighbor out when they are in financial collapse. Besides the mitzvah that we're dealing with here of judging meritoriously, omnam chalila leminahel hamosad, but it's God forbid, it's forbidden for the person themselves who we're talking about, who made the bad move, it's forbidden for them to excuse themselves by these excuses that we're making for them. Like they need to do real tshuva and understand, feel the remorse and feel the shame, and to go through that process. They can't excuse themselves with all these explanations and justifications. God forbid, lakshov shemutar, to argue that it's permitted for them to do such as this, kol shehu letovat haTorah, for the sake, because it's for some, the ends justify the means. It's forbidden for them to rationalize that. Atzmo chas v'shalom, lakshov shemutar she'en haTorah chafsa b'kasfim ela sheker, that you're not allowed to use stolen monies to support mitzvahs and learning. Va'asur la so shum avera kedei lahagzig Torah, and you're not allowed to do any kind of sin to or crime in order to because it's somehow justified by the end, which is the Torah study that's going to come out of it. V'kara kativ she'erik Yisrael lo ya'ase avla. He brings verses to support that. V'kol divreinu eino ela l'sha'er anashim shehem mechuyavim l'ilmod zchut al otam shechas v'shalom shagu b'zeh. And so all our words are only to for the rest of the folks, not the criminal, but the rest of the folks to kind of approach them, the judgment of them, in a more humble rather than a more arrogant way.
Lucky we don't have any fundraisers on this call.
Right.
It's our time for sharing.
Right.
And I wanted to go back to what I raised before. And right after that, there was a section where a few times it mentioned this applies also to yourself.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I can't.
Well, I said that. It didn't really.
Oh, you added it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's talking about, you know, you imagine that, like, just like if you would do, it went so far as to say that if you would do such a behavior, you would make all kinds of excuses for yourself. So okay. Whatever excuses you would make for yourself, you make for them. But the issue that came up when you shared your story at the beginning was that to lechatchila, to like from the beginning, this obligation of judging to the side of merit actually does apply to judging ourselves to the side of merit as well. All the, you know, right. I mean, but it also, like in this last paragraph, it is a little bit more complicated because when we do something that is, like we know when we do something that is a crime or a sin, that that there you don't, like that distinction between judging the behavior and doing tshuva on that, and that tshuva requires remorse, versus understanding that we ourselves are you know, we really are doing the best we can do, and we're really trying, and that we are redeemable. And so we judge ourselves gently, we judge our behavior squarely.
Okay. Are you referring to the part about the fundraiser?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll have to think about that one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
On the subject of judging ourselves gently, as you put it, I mean, there are, at least in my case anyway, small transgressions that I make I'm sure on a daily basis, you know, not speaking respectfully or like, I don't know what have you. There's more than I care to, you know, actually pay attention to. But I think the value as I'm listening to you, because it's kind of, I'm trying to really parse it out here. The value in judging myself gently is not to to let myself off the hook necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's more to understand the origin of the behavior. Mm-hmm. And if I am quick to judge myself, which often is the case, then that quick judgment doesn't leave enough, in my case, room to actually understand the origin of the behavior and so mm-hmm. learn how to do things differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right. Right. Which really, I mean, tshuva is something that doesn't happen quickly. I mean, it really does take some thought. It's a meditation of what did I do? Could I have done better? Like, where did the the roads diverge, and how did I end up on that road instead of this road? Like, where did that, what was the point of that? So that I can hopefully do differently.
Correct. Yeah. And oftentimes I can, you know, at least in my case, I remember one time also Alana mentioned that growing up in her family was like swimming with the sharks. That I think I got that right. Yeah. That, I mean, we all inherit.
That's an acceptable quote.
but like we all inherit these behaviors from our family. And of course, in our families, they're considered normal because that's what we knew.
Uh-huh, right.
And then you get out into the real,
Right.
And so like, again, that harsh judgment doesn't give me enough room to really go back and say, wow, I totally have been behaving this way because that's what I thought was how it's done. Right. But guess what?
Right. And he definitely emphasizes that point over and over, that, you know, like that our family of origin and the norms of that are very much influential in our behavior, and you know, we can have, we can carry with us a lot of bad habits that we got from those very formative years of our life.
So just add one more thing to what I said before, and that's to quote another friend is saying, if you're going to beat yourself up, use a feather. And I really love that. It's hard to remember sometimes, but when I do, I really appreciate it.
Sorry, Dee, what you mentioned, in passing, just the psychic relief, I think you said, of scorn. I mean, I'm assuming we'll get into that when you get to scorn, but is there anything else you can talk about that mechanism?
Well, I mean, that's the whole scapegoat thing, that there is a somehow like dumping, you're able to dump your own shame, which you, nobody wants, like it's the spiritual nausea shame. So it when someone else becomes a scapegoat and you are self-righteously judging them, it's like a you project all your own shame onto them, and then you can feel relieved of it for a moment at least. And it's a real problem. I mean, now that there's the internet, it's just like there's, it's, you know, people just get torn to shreds.
Yeah, and oftentimes, unfairly and without reason, beyond reason.
Right.
Beyond reason. Right. I mean, yeah.
Right.
I'm wondering though, on the subject of judging ourselves, if there's, you know, much the way the narcissistic supply journal helps to stay conscious of that, you know, kind of distorted hunger. If there's, I suppose journaling is another way to do it, but to be aware of the self-judgment.
Right.
Because it really is like, we think, at least where I come from, and I have to assume at least Alana's in this camp, that there's this virtue to self-flagellation. And there isn't.
It just isn't. There really isn't.
But then, you know, how do you really get off that habit?
Well, so, I mean, it is like kind of in tshuva, it is like the tshuva process, the last step is that there is relief and a sense of closeness, that you're closeness to Hashem, and simcha. And if your tshuva doesn't bring you to simcha, then you're doing something wrong. And and so that, like, personality inventory, that is the basis of, like, the classic, like, before Shabbat, the classic reflection before Shabbat was a tshuva, like, to just go through the week and acknowledge, what did I do good, and give yourself a pat on the back, and what did I, you know, kind of, what kinds of things that I do that I'm not so proud of, and that I feel like I'm not comfortable with, and I want to change that. So then to go through the stages of tshuva, which is, I did this, I to meditate for a moment on it and feel the remorse, and then the commitment to stay on top of it and to do different. And that should, like, that's not self-flagellation, that's productive, and it should bring joy. If it doesn't bring joy and relief, then there's something wrong.
Thank you so much for today. I have to dart off to pick up my mom. So thank you so much. I'll see you next week, everybody.
Okay, tomorrow.
Bye, tomorrow. Bye. Bye.
I can give one example in the movement from self-flagellation to, like, adjustment. And so, like, just a sort of quick example is, I met someone in a moment where they had lost their wallet, for example, and they were in a panic. And I caught her in the moment, reassured her, brought her back kind of into her body. There was this, like, great sisterhood with a stranger moment. And then it was a snowstorm. So I went back to, like, walk home. And I lived like 30, 40 minutes away. So, I mean, again, it was serendipitous that I met her in that moment. But I walked a little bit of the way and I was like, oh, I really could have made her a cup of tea. Like, I could have just sat with her and made her a cup of tea. Now, I knew I had had a sort of angelic presence for her, right? Narcissistic supply, check. Like, I did great. And also, I did great. But then there's this second piece, which was like, but you could have done greater. Like, you could have really made this an epic moment. And I started to go into this real machine, like what you're calling. And so almost losing everything that I had done, because it was worthless without a cup of tea. And so, and then I was like, okay, stop, hold that, keep walking, you know? And then it was like, okay, what is she there to teach me? Like, how is this situation actually all about me from my imagination to help me? And it was like, slowly, slowly, like, and I got different lessons and I'm like, I needed the cup of tea. I needed to sit down and bask for a moment in my narcissistic supply and take it in. And like, just that, I was like, oh, you have a problem just sitting with it and taking it in. Right. And so it's, again, I'm still using the language of problem. So there's still this thing moving around me, which is like, could have, you know, like that. And at the same time, part of my running away is that I didn't want to even like loot, like ruin the moment or take it for myself, right? Like not even trusting myself as a vessel to be able to just sit with a moment. Like, okay, I delivered good, run, you know, like it, like as if I'm on like an amazing spiritual race. You know, like, okay, there might be another good deed out there. I've got to go, like a superhero or something. And so it's like, and it was a funny thing. So like, I really sat with it and it moved around, but it was really bought, you know, it was really, it had me. And the next day I spoke to two friends, one of which is Sari Udi, and both of them affirmed me that, yeah, a cup of tea really would have been nice, but you did great. You know, like, So what I mean is that I didn't have people around me that were flattering me unnecessarily. Like they agreed with my assessment and also held and gave me narcissistic supply. So it's like, there is something wonderful. And like, I can discuss with you at another time, probably at great length, of like how I in a very bad way dealt with judgments and stuff in life. And, but like, so now it's more just for the sake of self-assessment. It's like, okay, like it's not bad to self-assess and say, oh, growth moment, without taking away the narcissistic supply that actually was due. So it becomes this dance, but you start to become you become obsessed or sort of like tuned in to a different kind of adjustment. It's, you know, then the simcha, I would say, comes in when you're laughing, like, wow, like I'm really driving myself crazy over a cup of tea. Like I have made it. So yes, but you have to keep like a cup of tea can be as whatever as anything. And so it's just that perspective, but you really, it's unfortunately those of us that have been blessed with this gift, it is a lifelong practice. I don't see myself getting out of it anytime soon. It's just, and you know, you can see from Instagram, the world is kind of waking up to, or whatever social media, like this, the self-care and the kindness, like it's wonderful. And I love that it's in the Weltanschauung. It's just like on the other side of it's not all good. Like we are here to still keep improving. And that impulse in us, although it's been distorted, is not entirely bad. So that's what I'm trying to heal now. Like, it's just like self-improvement that's what I'm here for, but you know, it should be more fun.
Love this story. Totally love this story. And yeah, it's a great illustration. thank you. Thanks for, that gives me something to sit with. I have to jump off now. Well,
yeah. Okay. Have a great week, everybody.
All right. Shavua tov. Bye, everyone.
Bye, Sean.
Bye, you guys. Bye.